That 24-game win streak is no more. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. This is After the Score.
Welcome to After the Score from WOSU Public Media. I'm Steve Brown alongside Thomas Bradley. The Ohio State basketball team loses its first real test of the season against Michigan State. We'll ask a beat writer if OSU was exposed and what to look for the rest of the season. We'll also give our not-so-subtle opinions on how players are elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. But first, for the first time in 25 games, the Ohio State football team lost. And then they lost again. Back-to-back undefeated regular seasons were overshadowed by losses to Michigan State in the Big Ten Championship game and Clemson in the Orange Bowl. For more, we sat down with Ben Axelrod. He covers the Buckeyes for the Buckeye Sports Bulletin. Ben, just a month ago, OSU had their chests puffed out. They were 22-0 since Urban Meyer took over. To say they were humbled by Michigan State and Clemson, I think, is a massive understatement. What happened? How did we get to this point?
I think this team was a fraud, to be honest. I the way that this season ended, I kind of look at now 2012 as separate from 2013. I think that 2012 was what it was. It was the 12-0 year. It was the undefeated season, and there was no bowl game at the end for reasons we're all aware of. But now I think you look at this 2013 team where there were national title expectations, and then two of the two toughest teams they play at the end there, Michigan State and Clemson, they lose to, and I think it puts a giant, you know, asterisk on this entire 2013 season.
So both teams were just better than Ohio State.
Yeah, better. But I don't think you could reasonably look at Michigan State or Clemson and say either of those teams was worse than Ohio State. I think Ohio State was overmatched in both games.
So we're in the offseason now. What needs to change for next year? Because expectations in Columbus are always high. What needs to change to fix, you know, the Ohio State team being a fraud?
They need to get the defense shored up. And I don't know if that's something that you can just put a Band-Aid on, or if it's going to take some massive, massive overhauls both on the coaching staff and talent-wise. I think Everett Withers leaving is interesting because I watched his James Madison press conference, which shows you just how much time I have on my hands these days. And the philosophies that he was talking about defensively with what he wants to instill at James Madison were definitely different from what Luke Fickell wants to do at Ohio State. And that's kind of what I've been hearing, is that there was some disconnect between Withers and Fickell. So I am interested to see if you get the entire coaching staff on one page and you get them aligned, if that shores up the problem. And I also think offensively you need a playmaker like a Sammy Watkins. Now, I know that's a lot to say. You know, he's probably the best wide receiver in the country. But a player like that, just somebody dynamic in the passing game at the wide receiver position who can make plays like we saw with Clemson.
For those that don't know, Everett Withers took a job at James Madison. He was the co-defensive coordinator for the Ohio State Buckeyes. And his counterpart, Luke Fickell, is still at Ohio State. And Sammy Watkins, he's talking about, is a wide receiver for Clemson who did tear apart the Ohio State Buckeyes in their Orange Bowl appearance.
So do you see Fickell as the defensive coordinator in 2014?
No. He's going to be on the staff. He could be, for all I know. It would not shock me in the least if he was. But they have a hire to make to replace Everett Withers. And from the names I'm hearing, it sounds like it's going to be somebody who's going to be calling the defense, and Luke will be relegated into a probably co-defensive coordinator in title, but his primary focus will be coaching the linebackers.
Luke Fickell, always been an Ohio State guy, played here in the early 90s and been a coach here ever since. He's an Ohio State guy through and through.
Yeah, unless he gets a head coaching job. I know he was interested in the Bowling Green job.
Rumors for some Florida jobs as well.
I had heard, he had turned down Florida Atlantic, actually. Atlantic. So he's had offers to
probably
leave.
A good choice.
And then Stan Drayton was also rumored for that job too. But yeah, from he is an Ohio State guy, and he's not going to leave here for anywhere but a head coaching job.
In the last few years, Ohio State has kind of been known as this team that overperforms in the Big Ten and then just it falls apart in the postseason. And this does nothing to help those stereotypes. Is that still how Ohio State is seen nationwide? Is just kind of a fraud, like you said at the beginning?
Yeah, I think there's still a lot of that whole SEC speed, a lot of that South stuff that permeates. I don't think any of it matters. I think that's all just perception. I think especially with the playoff, all you're going to have to do now is win the Big Ten with two or less losses, and you're going to get into that playoff. Maybe only one loss. I don't know. But none of the perception stuff and what Ohio State did in 2006 or 2007 or this past season is really going to matter moving forward.
You're listening to After the Score from WOSU Public Media, and we're talking Ohio State football with Ben Axelrod from the Buckeye Sports Bulletin.
You mentioned the SEC speed. Ohio State had a pretty good offseason in recruiting. A lot of Southern guys that have come in and are playmakers. Talk about how Ohio State's recruiting could impact next season.
Yeah, well, you just look back to last season. You bring in a Dontre Wilson from Texas, and then this year you're bringing in the likes of a Johnny Dixon from down in South Florida. Urban Meyer's trying to recruit those national guys. They're not. You look at these past two classes, counting 2013 and 14. There's not a whole lot of Ohio guys, so they really are moving in that direction. And that's kind of what I'm saying about Sammy Watkins is you need a guy like Dontre Wilson to step up and just be that game breaker. And I think, you know, Carlos Hyde is what he is, and he's a phenomenal running back, and we know what Braxton Miller is capable of. But just to be able to get somebody on the outside and really take the ball to the house, I don't think Ohio State had that this season.
OSU always has top recruiting classes. They're chock full of 4- and 5-star recruits. Could coaching be the issue? It seems like we have the talent. It seems like Ohio State has the talent.
I don't think they had the talent this year. I think that the wide receiver position was kind of a patchworked over position. And I think that's big when you talk about the you know, the whole SEC speed thing. I think that's really a position that stands out to me. They're still kind of modeled like a Big Ten team, and I think there was still some mixing of the philosophies of the coaching staff and what the personnel was best suited to do.
You know, we talk about the guys that we have coming in, Raekwon McMillan, a lot of good recruits. But talk about the guys that are leaving and could be leaving. I know it's still kind of up in the air for Braxton Miller whether he's coming back or not. But Ohio State is losing Bradley Roby to the draft and Ryan Shazier to the draft. Talk about what that means for this team.
It's not good. We talk about how this defense is kind of a patchwork defense, and those are probably, you know, outside of Joey Bosa, I think those are probably your two best defenders. And now you're moving Deron Grant into that number one corner spot, and the linebacker position was as weak as it's ever been at Ohio State, and now you lose arguably the best linebacker in the country in Ryan Shazier. They're going to have to get those holes filled, I should say. And Raekwon McMillan, maybe, I don't know. Playing linebacker as a true freshman is tough to do. So you know you're going to need somebody like a Joshua Perry or Deron Grant or Armani Reeves to step up and really become a Big Ten type of player.
They do have Mike Miller still redshirted this year.
Mike Mitchell,
and Trey Johnson will likely play more next year. The loss of Carlos Hyde in particular, he's a senior. He's not going pro early. He's a senior. What does that mean? Running back, it's a pretty deep position at Ohio State, but he was clearly the best running back. How big of a fall off is it from a guy like Carlos Hyde to a guy like Ezekiel Elliott or Dontre Wilson?
You know what? That's what I'm most interested to see, actually, because I really like Carlos Hyde, and I know what he brings to the table. But I think a lot of his runs were a result of the offensive line and Urban Meyer's scheme, quite frankly. And I am interested to see how they incorporate in Ezekiel Elliott, because he is a different type of running back and he is a guy who you can get on the outside. I'm also interested to see a guy like Briante Dunn. I know he's a name who's kind of got lost in the shuffle, but he's a big back like Carlos Hyde. And if he can get some of those holes that Hyde got, and now that's a whole other issue because the offensive line's gone. But I'm really interested to see what a guy like Briante Dunn can do in this upcoming season.
You're listening to After the Score from WOSU Public Media. We're talking about Ohio State football with Ben Axelrod from the Buckeye Sports Bulletin.
Ben, one last thing we'll talk about today is the Orange Bowl game. Some say Ohio State maybe overachieved a little bit to make it a little bit better of a game. You know, what did you see from that team and just the heart and the talent out there?
I saw, you know, a team that showed that it could compete on the national level and that was, you know, probably a top 10 team this season. But I didn't see a team that could match Clemson punch for punch with you know, the Sammy Watkins and the Taj Boyd. And even Clemson's defense, I know Ohio State scored 35 points, but they were getting to Braxton consistently and really knocking Braxton on the ground. And that was really the difference at the end of the game, I thought. I saw a better team in Clemson, and I just throughout the entire week there was a bad feeling that permeated throughout the Buckeyes. It started with the Noah Spence suspension, and the whole team caught the flu, and Jeff Heuermann was getting pumped full of IV, and you know some of that stuff is out of their control. They can't control that stuff. Now the Noah Spence stuff, that is in their control, but there was just a bad vibe permeated through that team, and I think it kind of what I thought would happen. It kind of showed its way onto the field on Friday.
As you mentioned, Noah Spence was suspended for 3 games for testing positive for performance-enhancing drugs, and his first game was the Orange Bowl, and he'll miss the first 2 games of next season.
And we have been talking about Ohio State football with Ben Axelrod from the Buckeye Sports Bulletin. Ben, thanks as always.
Thanks for having me.
Turning now from OSU football to OSU men's basketball. The Buckeyes are coming off 4 straight appearances in the Sweet 16 and hope to make a long tournament run again this year. They rolled through non-conference play undefeated but lost their 3rd game of Big Ten play against Michigan State. We wanted to see if OSU is headed back to the Sweet 16 this year or starting their spring break early. So we called Doug LeMaurice. He covers the team for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. He says this year's squad will likely have to rely on defense.
I mean, they're such a defense-first team, and then the offense clearly has been more of a balanced attack. And I think they like that in a lot of ways. They sort of talked about that in the preseason, not really having one go-to guy, and I think it sort of keeps everybody involved a little bit more. But clearly they also, you know, they need to find offense against good teams. You know, that Michigan State game, LaQuinton Ross and Lenzel Smith have been their leading scorers. Those guys weren't on the floor for the rally late in the second half, you know, and you can't really have that kind of thing. So I think in the toughest games, they do need a guy like LaQuinton Ross to be there and make big shots. But I think ultimately they replace scoring like that by not needing it as much because their defense is that good.
Doug, do you think LaQuinton Ross has come back down to earth at all? He had that great performance in the tournament last year, and I think a lot of people thought he was going to make that next leap this year. And I'm not saying he's a bad player, but he hasn't quite progressed as far as a lot of people hoped.
Well, a lot of that was based on what he did in the NCAA tournament. He certainly wasn't as much of a factor during the whole course of the year. But when it mattered most and they went to that small lineup in the tournament, he was great. And I think some people did jump the gun about his potential and that translating right away. It's different to do it every game, every night, you know, and he had a slow start to the season. Then he got rolling. Clearly he'd been scoring in double figures almost every game, but then to sort of disappear like that in a game as important as Michigan State, I thought was a step back for him and the team. I mean, he is probably the guy, he certainly is the guy most capable of making his own shot, of sort of taking a step back jumper or driving around a guy and hitting a runner. Against great teams, you've got to have guys who can do that. So they cannot afford for him to go away in big games like that. He has that potential, but he has to show it all the time, not some of the time.
You mentioned the strength of this team is its defense. And it took, you know, overtime against Michigan State to surrender 70 points for the first time this season. Could, you know, having a reliable defense help the Buckeyes, you know, stay in games where they might not have it on offense?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the key. You know, I think what, you know, everybody always wants to look ahead to what's going to happen in the NCAA tournament. When they face elite NBA level type of talent, then we'll see. You know, I mean, then it's going to be a lot harder. Then you have to score a little bit. But I think this defense is more than good. I think this is, if the offense was as good as this defense is, they'd be scoring 100 points tonight. You know, people would say, who cares? If they can't guard anybody, they put up points on anyone. It's the reverse of that. They stop pretty much everybody. So it's like, well, who cares if they don't score that much? I think it's a dominant defense that starts in the backcourt with Aaron Kraft and Shannon Scott. They have really good wing defenders who are active and long and smart with Sam Thompson and Lenzel Smith. And then Amir Williams has become much more of a factor inside. So when you have 5 guys who can defend and want to defend on the floor at the same time, it's a game changer. I think, you know, they are beyond the level of, oh, it's a good defense. They are at many times a dominant defense.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to After the Score from WOSU Public Media. We're talking about Ohio State basketball with Doug LeMaurice from the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Doug, where do you put Ohio State in the Big Ten? We've spent a lot of time talking about the Michigan State game. Are they just behind Michigan State? Is it kind of a 1A, 1B type of thing? Or would you put them
in Wisconsin, too?
Would you put them somewhere else? Or where do you rank them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's hard. As you guys mentioned, Wisconsin, they're going, Ohio State goes to Wisconsin on February 1st. Wisconsin's a different team this year. Wisconsin is not the typical slowdown, defense, grinded-out Bo Ryan team. They're
not the 50-point-a-game team.
Score. I mean, Sam Decker is unbelievable. They're putting up some points. I mean, they are another level of Wisconsin. So I think those three teams are at the top. Michigan has struggled. I'm not surprised by that. It's so hard to replace a guy like Trey Burke. But I think Michigan State Wisconsin and Ohio State are the three guys at the top. And, you know, I mean, to lose on the road at the Breslin Center in overtime is about as good of a loss as you could hope for. You know, that is a really tough place to play. They were dead in the water, and they stormed back. And if Shannon Scott makes that layup at the end of the game, you know, Ohio State wins. Mm-hmm. So I think Ohio State is right in this race, right to the final wire with both the Badgers and the Spartans.
Yeah, I know it was a couple weeks ago, but let's talk about the Notre Dame game that happened in late December. Probably one of the best comebacks in a long time in college basketball. It was in New York City, Madison Square Garden, under the spotlight, and the Buckeyes rose to the occasion. Talk about what that means for this team.
Well, you know, it's been interesting. They did, you know, and I asked Dadbot about that this year. They haven't played. They didn't play Duke in the non-conference. They didn't play Kansas. They didn't play Florida. They didn't have that crazy, intimidating road game. Now, he said, you know, Marquette was a tough place to play, but Marquette, I don't think, has been quite as good as people thought. So that Notre Dame game in New York City was, you know, probably the best chance to say, okay, well, let's see what they got before they get to the Big Ten. And again, to be in that situation and to come back like that, I think there's a physical and a mental component to it, you know, that they have that defense that gets in people's heads, you know, that they can make mm-hmm. steals. They also draw charges. They make offenses look silly. And then, you know, what happened at Michigan State sort of backed it up. It's not just that these teams are collapsing. It's that Ohio State makes them collapse. So you can criticize their non-conference schedule, and fairly. You know, I mean, they have not played as tough a schedule as somebody like Michigan State or many, many other teams. But that was, I think, a big win to show that, you know, they can play a decent team in a tough spot and find a way to win.
We're talking about Ohio State basketball with Doug Lemorese from the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Doug, what would you say is the biggest surprise of for Ohio State so far this season? Is it Mark Loving coming on the way he has? Is it LaQuinton Ross not quite making that big leap that a lot of people thought? What would you say is the biggest surprise so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think Loving has been interesting for sure. I mean, he's the guy. He ended up with the ball in his hand at the end of overtime to try to keep Ohio State in that game. You know, a true freshman. We've seen great true freshmen at Ohio State in the past. I don't think anyone thought necessarily Mark Loving was at that level, but I think he is going to play important minutes. I might say Shannon Scott, though. I think we all knew Shannon Scott was going to be good. There had been so many comparisons the previous 2 years of Shannon Scott and Trey Burke. Ohio State, you know, basically took Scott instead of Burke. Burke becomes an All-American, Big Ten Player of the Year, National Player of the Year. But Shannon Scott has turned into that guy whose defense is almost as dominant as Aaron Kraft's. And then offensively, he's, I think, a little bit quicker, a good distributor. He still needs to make his own shot more often. Would have been nice if he had made that layup, can be a more consistent jump shooter. But I think Shannon Scott has overall forced on the floor for 40 minutes. I think his game has really taken that next step this year, and I'm not sure I necessarily expected him to be that good already this season.
Doug Lemorese covers Ohio State basketball for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Doug, thanks again.
Thanks, guys.
The always controversial Baseball Hall of Fame inductees were announced this week, and it was a relatively short list. Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, and Frank Thomas were the only inductees. And it's not because of a lack of candidates. Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, Mark McGwire, some of the best players of their generation were once again eligible, but were once again denied because of their ties to the steroid era. Craig Biggio, the former Houston Astro, who has not had these ties to performance-enhancing drugs like the names I just mentioned, he fell short. He missed out by two votes. And Thomas, I'm going to go on a little bit of a rant here, I think, but I can't tell you how pompous these baseball writers seem and how much it seems like they've completely hijacked mm-hmm. what should be a great celebratory time for baseball, and they've made it about themselves in this feigned morality.
Yeah, it's been happening over the years, ever since the steroid era took over. The baseball writers are making statements. They're making this about themselves. There was a report yesterday that Dan Le Batard of the Miami Herald sold his vote to a website because he thought that his vote was worthless, that it didn't mean anything anymore.
Yeah, the readers of Deadspin actually voted for Dan Le Batard.
Yeah, and I guess he didn't sell it, but he gave it to them. He didn't receive any compensation, but he said that his vote was so worthless that it didn't mean anything to him because the voting process has gotten so, you know, out of hand and flawed. And a lot of that has to do with the steroid era. You know, Mark McGwire was on the ballot. Chances are Mark McGwire is never going to be in the Hall of Fame. But that year with him and Sammy Sosa in, you know, 1998, where him and Sammy Sosa were, lighting up baseball headlines, making baseball relevant again after their lockout year a couple years past. You know, Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire will never be in the Hall of Fame, even though they were the best players probably in the 1990s.
Right, and everyone was juicing at this time. Maybe not everyone, but certainly a large enough percentage of players were juicing at this time that Barry Bonds, Mark McGwire, Roger Clemens, they were still the best. They did not have that much of an advantage over other players. Now, you can make the argument that a lot of players were clean, and they probably were, but let these guys in. Put an asterisk by their name. Create a special wing of the Hall of Fame if you want. But the Hall of Fame is a museum. There's memorabilia there from Joe Jackson, who threw the 1908 World Series. And it doesn't get any worse than that, but there's memorabilia for him in there. And it's because the Hall of Fame, it really should be a museum.
Barry Bonds was a Hall of Famer before he took steroids.
Yeah, skinny Barry Bonds.
Skinny Barry Bonds, normal head size Barry Bonds.
Five-tool player Barry Bonds.
Was the best player in baseball. And he saw a bunch of other players coming up cheating, you know, using performance-enhancing drugs that caught up to his level. And, you know, I'm not one to justify the use of steroids. I'm not the one to say that if I was out there, I wouldn't or I would do it, because I don't know. I'm not an elite baseball player at all. But if I'm the best in my game and I see people coming up passing me in skill level because they've been using a performance-enhancing drug, I'm going to explore all options to see, hey, maybe this isn't the worst idea. If everyone's doing it, I'm kind of justifying it at this point.
You're listening to After the Score from WOSU Public Media, and we're discussing the voting process for how players get into the Baseball Hall of Fame. And this hits especially close to home for me because I went into journalism to be a sports writer. Then I realized these guys work nights and weekends every week, so I drifted to morning radio. But these baseball writers were my professional heroes. I mean, heroes might be a little bit of a strong word, but these are the guys I wanted to be, and now I can't help but have complete disdain for them.
Yeah, I don't know his name, but there was one baseball writer that basically said forever while he has a Hall of Fame ballot, he's never going to vote for a player who played in the steroid era. So, you know, that's taking away, like you mentioned, Craig Biggio. He missed the Hall of Fame this year by 2 votes. Mm-hmm. There are 570 votes given out to writers. He missed it by 2 because one guy said he's never going to vote for someone in the steroid era, and you know there are probably others that took suit there.
Another guy made a stance by only voting for Jack Morris because he insists Jack Morris is being robbed by the Hall of Fame by not being let in, and so he only voted for Jack Morris, even though they're clearly Greg Maddux, who should have been a unanimous pick.
Should have been. He missed it by 3%. Almost 15 votes.
Right, and so Craig Biggio is likely not in the Hall of Fame because of one guy who won't vote for anybody who played during the steroid era, even though Craig Biggio has zero ties to mm-hmm. steroids, and because this other Yahoo only votes for Jack Morris, who was a good player, but to only vote for Jack Morris, that's just intellectually dishonest. These guys, I cannot accurately display my frustration with these guys.
How do you fix the system?
I don't know how you fix it, but it clearly needs fixed. It clearly needs fixed. I'm not the fittest guy, so I'm not being disparaging, but these are a bunch of doughy, lazy dudes who've probably played very little baseball in their life. They know a lot about baseball, but they probably resent certain players. Jim Rice, the reason he was not let in for the longest time was because he was a jerk. And so you have these crossing guards who are just – they're like the receipt guy at Best Buy, and they're just hijacking the process.
With 570 ballots out there, you got to assume of those 570, some of these guys could be homers. Some of these guys could be yahoos that hold grudges, like you said. Mm-hmm. If there's a Boston Red Sox writer out there, I'm sure there's plenty of Boston Red Sox writers who hold ballots. Maybe don't vote for a Yankee for whatever reason. It's a flawed system where there's a lot more focus on human emotion than there should be.
Yes, absolutely. And I can't necessarily blame them. If I was cursed out by Barry Bonds in a locker room, and I had a vote for him to be in the Hall of Fame, I might not vote for him. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's a human reaction. It's an understandable reaction, but it's absurd and it needs fixed. And that will do it for After the Score from WOSU Public Media. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. You can always find us online at wosu.org/afterthescore or search on Twitter @afterthescore.